Okay, we have a part two today. Here we go. Okay, we are up to number eight. Number eight says Musar Chavrusa. Musar Chavrusa. Okay. Of the two Chavrusas a week, I would suggest that one of them is a Musar Chavrusa. Musar Chavrusa means it's a Chavrusa where you get together, and of course you're going to learn, but one of the goals of the spending time together is to discuss things, and it goes like this. Some of us have friends that are just very pleasant people and would never give us constructive criticism, which is okay. Some people are like that. Some of us have friends who give a lot of constructive criticism, but we say to ourselves, like, why are they criticizing me? You know, and like you don't really feel like you want to listen to their constructive criticism. But sometimes you can find people, sometimes an older friend, an older sibling sometimes, a friend who knows you pretty well, is willing to give you constructive criticism, and you'll take it. If you have a friend like that, that friend, that chaver, is a gold mine. The Rabbeinu Yonah writes that it's when it says k'nei l'cha chaver, one of the purposes of a chaver is to give you tochacha, advice, constructive criticism. Chaver like that is a gold mine. Chaver b'gematria is gold mine. It's not, but work it out, more or less. And now, why is this so important? Once a week a Musar Chavrusa. Here's the idea. It's normal in life to have ups and downs. Ups and downs are normal. You want to avoid this, where you have a down, and you're stuck somewhere for 6 months, you're in this major rut. Because once you're down for 6 months, it's very hard to get out of it. So the goal of a Musar Chavrusa is that she'll catch you before you get stuck in this rut. It's very, very, excuse me, very, very important. Let's say you live in Brooklyn, and you go to Rabbi Reisman's shir every Motzei Shabbos, like the rest of Brooklyn, and you have your chavrusa every Monday night. So then, one Monday, you're not there at the shir one Motzei Shabbos, and your friend says, let's say your friend's name is Sarah, she says, Rivka, where were you at the shir? I didn't see you at the shir at Motzei Shabbos. And you're a little embarrassed, you don't know what to say, you look down. She says, Rivka, where were you? I didn't see you always. Oh, no, Rivka, you weren't at home watching Nala.com until 2 in the morning on Motzei, that was a joke, Motzei Shabbos, instead of coming to the shir, were you? And maybe you were at home watching, you weren't watching maybe Nala.com. So maybe you were, and it was a mistake, it's better to go to the shir. So Sarah says to Rivka, Rivka, oh, come to the shir, and then you talk about it, and you talk it out. That chavrusa on Monday night will be the difference between the normal ups and downs and getting stuck in a rut. And if you have a friend like that, this can be in person is better, this can be over Skype, you know, someone you're in contact with, it's very, very, very healthy. A similar thing, this girl has wrote to me to talk about, you know, it's sometimes with sensitivities and sneas, you know, things that are sort of borderline. And maybe you became more careful, and now you're becoming a little less careful. So your Musar Chavrusa will notice basically right away. She'll say, hey, come on, and you'll talk about it. So it's very important. If you have such a friend, it can be a friend, it can be an older sibling, someone you can talk to. If you're extra fortunate, if you have a teacher from high school that has time for you, we'll get to that in a second. You can try that as well. Very, very important that one of the two chavrusas, you can learn two sometimes. There isn't always an issue. But you know this is a place where there'll be give and take about where you're holding. Okay, number nine. A rav or a mentor. Okay, it's very, very, very important to have a rav or a mentor in your life, someone you can go to for advice and to talk to about things. Don't be afraid to call. This is a biggie. Your teachers in Israel, the rakazot, your teachers, don't be afraid to call. It's your job to call. They're the adults. They will tell you, oh, but they're too busy. They will tell you whether they're too busy. Oh, I'd love to talk to you, Rivka, but I can't talk right now. Can you call back in 2 hours? That's their job. It's your job to call. If you don't call, you're not going to talk to anyone. Your job is to call. I'm telling you, don't be worried about the reaction. The teachers want you to call. I'm saying if it happens to be that taka, it's not good for them. So they'll tell you. They're the adult. We're the adult. And we'll tell you whether it's time now or a different time. This happens all the time. Please, don't be afraid. Oh, it's such a small question. People here are very happy for you to call them. Number two, I wrote down here, reconnect with high school teachers. What that means is as follows. A lot of you, Baruch Hashem, have connections, good connections, with teachers from high school. So, reconnect. Make that phone call. Sometimes in Israel, it's a 7-hour difference. It's hard to, when you're awake and your teacher's awake, it's not always. Last night, I happened to be awake very late for a couple of different reasons. Baruch Hashem, all good. So I called my mother to say goodnight when it was 2:45. So that's one reason I give a shiur standing up, so I don't fall asleep while I'm speaking. She said, what are you doing awake tonight? So she gave me, what's her? Okay, what are you doing awake at 3 in the morning? Okay, whatever. And then I told her a funny story. I'll tell her a funny story. And she appreciated it. My Rebbe Rav Shechter Shlita, so he loves to learn. So 20 years ago, roughly, when I was in NYU, so a friend of mine was in Rav Aaron Kahn Shlita Shir. He's a Rebbe in NYU. Hey, that's Rav, one of Rav Lubarsky's closest Rebbeim. Does he quote him? I think he quotes him sometimes. Rav Kahn? He's one of his closest Rebbeim. So Rav Kahn said, I was Rav Shechter's roommate, and Rav Shechter went to sleep before I did, and Rav Kahn said, I would see sometimes he'd be sleeping, he'd get out of bed, go to the bookshelf, take a Rambam, look at a Rambam, close it and go back to sleep, and Rav Kahn said, quote, I am sure he was learning in his sleep. He called it sleep learning. Some people sleepwalk. They get up and they go to the fridge and take out a big piece of cake. And somehow, I don't know, it doesn't count because you were sleeping. Okay, whatever, sleepwalking. He says, Rav Shechter does sleep learning. Okay, so I've heard that story. I heard it 20 years ago. I heard it 5 minutes after it happened in the shir. So I wasn't there, but I heard it from my friend, Rav Aaron Cohen, Rav Pesach. Rav Aaron Cohen, he told, okay, you'll take him next semester. Good. You tell him this. He doesn't know the addition to the story. Well, if you're going to take him, he'll appreciate this. Listen to this. Good. So last week, my brother-in-law works in YU. And there was a big meeting of the Rosh Yeshiva of the Rabbanim in YU. They had to discuss something. And about the boys getting enough sleep. So Rav Kahn decided to tell the story at the meeting. He said, when I was a bachur here, I had a roommate who would get up in the middle of the night and go to the bookshelf and open and close around. And I'm sure he was learning in his sleep. And that was, Rav Herschel Shechter was my roommate. And Rav Shechter was there in the room. So I looked at him. So Rav Shechter says, I don't remember that. So Rav Kahn says, because you were sleeping. That's why I don't remember. That's a good story. He says, of course you remember. You were sleeping. You're the one who happened. You're not going to remember that. You were sleep warning. Anyway, so last night at 10 to 3, my mother heard that story and then she felt better. Okay, and then I went to sleep. But okay. What are we talking about? Oh yeah, high school teachers. Guys, reconnect. Reconnect. A lot of times, your high school teachers, they had a couple of years, they might know you even better than teachers in Israel sometimes. Make that, and they love it. They love it. I know a lot of your high school teachers, I mean, the Rabbanim, I know them. They love it, because they see you're asking serious questions, and you want to grow, and wonderful. So, again, you make the phone call. They're so busy. It's their job to say no. It's their job to say, maybe call me a different time. You try to make that connection. Very, very good idea. Many people get a lot of chiyus out of that. In connection with staying connected with teachers from Eretz Yisrael and reconnecting with teachers in the States from America. So one specific angle is also someone to go to for advice about college and courses in college. So it's good to have somebody older. You're assigned a certain reading and you want to know how to deal with it. Things come up. That's also an angle where it's very good to have someone older to talk to discuss these issues, sometimes challenging issues that come up when one is in university. A Rav, this applies for some of you. connect, reconnect with your shul rabbi. For many of you, he could be a posek, he could be someone you ask questions to. If you're fortunate enough to have a chash of a shul rav, you can talk to. I grew up in Silver Spring. I had my Rebbe Fiffer, he was nifter 3 years ago. The Rav Silver Spring, Rav Einemer, is that song. So I was close with him. I asked him shailas all the time. Ben Chaim Chaim, Rabbi Hayat Shlita. I'm close with. I speak to my Rebbeim all the time from high school, and it can give you chizuk if you have that connection with the shul rabbi. Now, the rabbi's always busy. Yes, he's busy. I'm telling you, shul rabbis would love to get phone calls from you. Shul rabbis deal with a lot of difficult situations. Why do you call the rav? Somebody's sick. Lo aleinu. And an old parent, or there's a question of a vagus, there's a potential divorce, there's shalom bias, there's a child having tzara. People call rabbis for all these difficult things. Rabbis deal with a lot of tzaras. To hear a young bas Torah who has a halacha shayla, who just wants to know how to serve Hashem properly, they enjoy that. Sister is very, very close with Rabbi Einemer. She's working in Goldman Sachs. This happened like many years ago. And she realizes as people are leaving the office, whoa, this is like Yichud maybe. So my sister called Rabbi Einemer from the office to ask him what to do about Yichud. And he told her what he thought she should do. So my parents are very close with the Rav and the Rebbetzin. And the Rebbetzin told my mother, he was so happy. Here, someone called him to ask him like a regular, ordinary shy, like how do I live my life as a Bas Torah? Fabulous. That's a good thing. So call them. Reconnect, and you know if you're able to have this potentially this, I'm telling you, shul rabbis deal with lots of challenging things, and if you would call them with us the regular question, and I was very fortunate. We were very close to the Rebbe Einemer. Just two stories quickly. We're fortunate if you have a connection with your shul rabbi, hold on to it, or your high school teacher, you hold on to it. It can give you chizuk. My sister once, when she was in Israel, in Mechala, she called my mother. Said, Mom, I need Rabbi Einemer's number. You have to ask him a question for me. So what is it? So what's the bracha on granola bars? So my mother says, Melissa, there are a lot of rabbis in Israel. Maybe you can ask somebody in Israel what the bracha is. She says, no, Mom, there are different opinions. I have to know what Rabbi Einemer thinks. He was like our posek, you know, to decide. I told you, once here in Mechala, it came up in class. So I emailed the OU, and a star K, and they wrote back the next day. The OU wrote back, interesting question, but definitely it's Adama. The star K wrote back, definitely Mizonos. I have the emails at home that the two of them are. Oh, there you go. Anyway, so then, just one story about Rabbi Einemer, and then we'll continue.
What's the answer?
Different opinions. Rabbi Einemer said Adama, so I say Adama, but they're different opinions. So Rabbi Einemer, this is an important thing to hear. Some of you, Eretz Hashem, you marry husbands, a rabbani and poskim. It's not enough when you're a posek. You know, it's not just you know the halacha. There's a way of saying it. I call it the fifth chiluk of Shulchan Aruch, that you know how to give a psak over. And you say a psak in a way that someone can hear it and accept it. It doesn't mean you change things. God forbid. You're not allowed to change the Torah. A rav is not allowed to change it. It's not your Torah to change. It's Hashem's Torah. But there are ways of saying it. When Rabbi Einemer was nifter, they had an article in Hamodia about a woman who was marginally observant, and her mother was in a wheelchair, and there was no Eruv. So her mother couldn't go to shul. So she asked Rabbi Einemer, and she said to him, this is what they quoted there. Does it make sense that God would rather my mother should be at home in the wheelchair in the living room as opposed to in shul, you know, davening on Shabbos? So it doesn't say what the answer was, but it says that after hearing the answer, she became more observant. Just the way he could explain things. It was Mitch Romaim to talk to him. My wife and I would just like calling him for shilas, just to hear him talk about things at a certain. Okay. So, oh yeah. Yeah, this comes up later, but we'll mention it now. One of my kids has a propensity to dehydrate. Dehydrates a lot. Very thin and this and then, and every 6 months, he's sort of sitting on the couch, and he gets this funny look, and he sort of half keels over. We go to the doctor, he gets him an IV, and he's better. That's what happens. It's not the average thing that goes on in a family, but, you know, Baruch Hashem, it happened to my parents' house once. My mother went like crazy. She said, "You're so calm." I said, "Mom, it happens all the time. Every 6 months he dehydrates and we get him an IV and he's fine." Okay. He, the whole thing, I told the story in the Kutzah about the Powerade powder. Monday, the Powerade. Okay, so he drank. Oh, he kept mission to drink in class, and he had special juice, the whole thing. Okay. So anyway, he was turning 12 and a half, and we knew he couldn't eat on Yom Kippur. He won't be able to fast on Yom Kippur, because it was Sakanas Nefashas. But this kid, Baruch Hashem, likes to do everything exactly right. So my wife and I said, you know, how are we going to explain this to him? Like, we just couldn't think. I just, it's so exciting. You know, all your friends are fasting and have to like to leave shul, and everyone knows he's going to leave. Why he's leaving? It's embarrassing. So I intuited that Rabbi Einar would be the right person. So we were going to the States for, I was going to the States for a bar mitzvah, and we tried to bring one child in every time to make it a special thing. So it was his turn, or we made it his turn. He came with me to the bar mitzvah. The bar mitzvah was in New York, and then I came in a day early, so I could spend the day taking the Amtrak down to Silver Spring, see my parents a little while, speak to Rabbi Einar, and then go back to New York. This is a very expensive shiloh. No, very expensive. Okay. So we sit down in his office. We sit down in his office, and I tell him, you know, he knew the shiloh already. He knew about it. And so I asked him. So then he says, you know, you can't fast. It's a kanas nefashas. And then he says, there was once a Chashiva Chassidus Sherebi who was setting his table on Yom Kippur with the nice tablecloth and china and napkins. Someone said, "What are you doing, Rebbe?" He said, "Well, I'm sick. I can't fast on Yom Kippur. So for me, there's a mitzvah to eat. And just like you have a mitzvah to fast and you should do the mitzvah b'simcha, I have mitzvah to eat b'simcha. So I'm sitting at the table to make it look nice for my mitzvah to eat on Yom Kippur." I was crying away. That was like the perfect answer that my son needed to hear. He was crying. Unbelievable. Anyway, so it was worth it just for that. So that was like, in other words, that's a special ability. We were worried for months about this, and in 30 seconds, it's like lifting a boulder off your shoulders. Okay, anyway, what are we talking about? Oh, yes, a show rabbi. If you have a show rabbi you can talk to, so you should connect with. It's very kedai. You got that? Guys, don't be afraid to call. Please. Oh, I wanted to call you something. I'm sorry I haven't called so long. Don't be afraid to call. Okay. That is number 9. Next, number 10. This is major. The room or your desk. Emotion versus the intellect of Orluk. I mentioned this last time. Now we'll mention it with more, even more lemaisa. Emotions come and go, but the intellect, assuming a person's healthy, Hashem is always there. You get inspired by something. It's inspirational. And then a few months later, the emotion's gone. The inspiration is gone. But you can use your intellect to hold on to the inspiration. What does that mean? When you're having an inspiring moment, you're at the kotel, and somehow you're feeling a beautiful tefillah, look around. Who's in front of you? Who's behind you? How squished it is over there? And you know, and where are you standing? Take as many mental pictures as possible. 6 months later, when the inspiration is gone, you sit down, you think about it, and you can, by thinking about all the details, you can bring back some of the inspiration. This works in real life. You can do this. Psychologists do this for a way of keeping a person more relaxed. The person who's busy and always nervous, and a guy does 1,000 things, he has 75-hour weeks, and he takes a vacation, and 75-hour work weeks. He takes a vacation, and he sees a canyon, and like, wow, this canyon is relaxing just to look at it. So psychologists say, take a mental picture, and every week, sit down, think about the canyon, and you can deep breathe and relax. This works in real life. Even more than just the mental picture are physical things. So, you want to make one spot in America. It could be your dorm room, it could be your room at home, or if that doesn't work, your desk. This reminds me of Eretz Yisrael. You've got your pictures there. You've got your Kotel picture, your Gedolim pictures, things like that. And, you know, we discussed last time, you know, you're learning Ein Ayah, and you have Edgar over there. You, this is what you think about. You have that little, you have that, it's important. And then what happens is, you say to yourself, when I'm sitting in this chair, I'm reconnected. When I enter this room, I'm reconnected. And it can be very helpful in staying strong when we're back in the Western world. Because here it's different. And that room or that desk, you want to make sure that it's very kadosh and very, very kadosh and Eretz Yisrael-like. And that's like you sit down there, this becomes your spot. It's a very, very good idea. And it's a very good application of the yesod that Rav Orlowick teaches. You know, if you bought Rav Nissel's books, you have his books there and things like that. It makes a big difference. And that's number 10. Number 11 is tefillah. Tefillah is number one. Tefillah is number one. Number two, you have to daven. You have to daven a lot. There's a big yesod from Avnevin Saul that you have to know, and it goes as follows: Hakol bidei shemayim chutz miyirah shemayim. Hashem controls everything except for yirah shemayim. That means whether you're healthy, whether you're wealthy, how smart you are, all that's up to Hashem. The one thing which we control is yirah shemayim. That's up to us. But what's very interesting is that we spend a lot of time asking Hashem for help in our avodas Hashem. Hashem, I don't want to have any. We say in the I don't have any nisyonos. Haser sata milafaneinu v'lo yideinis. I don't want to have any nisayon. Hashem, help me. If you go through the tefillah, we ask. Wait a second. But I thought that's up to me. Hakol b'deishan chutzam yirah shemayim. So what's the pshat? So Rav Nevinsol explains the pashup pshat is part of yirah shemayim is to ask Hashem for siyata d'shmaya and doing well. Everything needs siyata d'shmaya. Even yirah shemayim, which is what you're in control of, you also need siyata d'shmaya. Hashem will give you a little help. Let's say you're holding it at a level where you can pass these nisyonos, but not that nisayon. Hashem, please, please, don't give me that other nisayon. That's what we ask for. So keep in mind when you're davening that part of tefillah is to ask Hashem to help us serve Him better. Once you hear this, this comes up all the time in davening, that we're asking Hashem for help in our ruchnius. That's part of tefillah. That's part of yirah shemayim. To make that, you need some. If you need us help in gashmius and parnas and this, you need us help in that as well. So you have to daven a lot. We daven to remain strong over the Hashem. Very, very important. Okay. Then we have three other things. I've heard from different people. Number 12 is from a Talmud. Number 13 is from Dr. Pelkowitz says number 13. We'll get to it. And now it's in Rav Teller's, one of his latest books, Too Beautiful. Is that a book, Rav Teller? Yeah. Too Beautiful. The first story there. And number 14 is Rav Malinowitz's Mashal. So let's go. 12. Picture of an aged father, Emes. This is a beautiful mashal. Here is, I heard this mashal from a Talmud around 10 years ago in yeshiva. It's a great mashal. Here is the mashal. You have a young boy who's in a town, and the town is involved in a war, and it's overrun, and everyone's killed in the town. He survives. Okay. He's an orphan. 20, 30 years later, the boy walks into a store, someone says, oh, Yosef. Yes. Yosef, last name? Ginsburg. Yosef Ginsburg, yes? Oh, someone, Yosef, I was talking. He says, you're from this town, yeah? He says, Yosef, your father's alive. Now Yosef says, that can't be, no, it's not true. Everyone died in the town, I know it. He says, Yosef, your father's alive. He says, I'm sorry, listen, I know when I was younger. The guy takes out a picture of Yosef's father, and you can tell it's the father, the same facial features, the same everything, except he has aged. So it's the same picture, but the beard is grayer. There are more wrinkles. So you can tell it's the same guy, but he's older. So that picture, what is that picture? That picture is proof that the father is alive. Ooh, with that picture, the guy says, your father's in some far off land, So Yosef says, well, I'm going to find my father. And he goes on a boat, and he goes on an airplane. So if you have that picture in your hand, nothing will stop you from finding your father, because in your hand you have the proof of what the emes is. Because it's the same father, the same facial features, you can tell it's really him, but he's aged 30 years. This is what he looked like 30 years later. You know he's alive. Well, during the year in Israel, we're exposed to what the emes is. We have a perfect Torah, an eternal Torah that doesn't change. And we have to remember that we know what the emes is. And you hear things, and you read things in the newspaper, and it says this, and it says that. But don't forget, we were exposed for a year to the emes. There's a lot of emes in America too, that's for sure. But here, in seminary, when it's all Kodesh, you have a year of full extra exposure to emes, and the year in Israel has shown us what the emes is. So we should view the year in Israel like the picture of the old father, and just like if you have the picture of the old father, you'll do anything to get there. So when you know what the emes is, you'll do anything to stick with it. You sometimes read these stories, these news stories, that a guy was in jail for 30 years and he kept on fighting, and finally, oh, they did a new DNA test and it turns out he was innocent. Why do you keep fighting? If you know you're innocent, you keep on fighting. So if you know what the emes is, so sometimes there might be some challenges, but we should not forget that the year in Israel is the picture of that old father, and we know what the emes is. It's very important. There's a lot of confusion out there. The world changes. The world's changing. Changes really fast. The Torah is perfect. The Torah, the luchos, are made of stone. What does stone symbolize? Things don't change. Stone sort of sits there. The aron, which held the luchos, was made of gold. Gold symbolizes perfection. The aron that holds the luchos is also made of wood. What does wood symbolize? Growth, because trees grow. So Rav Hirsch writes that if we as individuals and as a nation guard the non-changing stone, perfect gold Torah, then we will grow and flourish like trees. That is a fabulous symbolism that Rav Hirsch explains. That's what life is about. You got to guard this old-fashioned perfect Torah. It doesn't change. The Western world changes all the time. It's incredible how quickly things are changing in the Western world. And unfortunately, it's not usually for the better. And we have to keep this in mind. We had exposure. We have in our pockets the picture of the old father, and we'll do anything to maintain that connection. Okay. And now we'll do the gold coin mushel, and then number 83. The gold coin mushel. This mashal is from Rav Malinowitz Shlita. He's the Rav in one Rav in Ramat Beit Shemesh. I hold this mashal is amazing. I hold that if Chafetz Chaim had soda machines, he would have said the same mashal. Okay, here's that's what I hold. Here's the mashal. A guy's walking along, and look, oh my gosh, he sees a gold coin on the ground. Whoa, fabulous! He picks it up, a $10,000 gold coin. So exciting. He's walking outside today, it's around 110 degrees outside, and he's walking along, and he passes a soda machine. Oh my gosh, this gold coin is exactly the size of a 5-shekel piece. Thank you. Takes the gold coin, puts it into the slot, and he gets his soda, or he gets his bottled water, whatever, and he drinks it. Oh, thank you, Hashem, you sent me a soda. Fool, he just wasted a $10,000 gold coin for a soda. Got it. That's the mashal. The nimshal is, if Hashem gives you a precious gift, don't waste it on a soda. And there are many examples of this. The Rav's example was, you're intelligent and you can analyze things, so the men in the shul should learn. He always pushes the men in the shul to learn more. Use your mind to learn more. That's one example. Let's say a person is very organized. You know, you can do spreadsheets and this and that. So, whoa, use your organizational skills to run Tomchei Shabbos of Queens or the five towns. It's a massive operation. Somebody has to run it. 1 year we were in the States for Pesach. I wanted to find something productive, so we went, I took up my kids, we delivered for Tomchei Shabbos of Queens. Unbelievable. Thousands of boxes and hundreds of destinations for to places you deliver to. And dozens and hundreds of delivery cars. I told them, I know Forest Hills pretty well, I know Kew Gardens well, I don't know Kew Gardens at all, because I get, at Metropolitan the numbers change, right? That, whatever. I get lost, so they gave him Kew Gardens and we got lost, whatever, but it was okay. Now, so you can run Tomchei Shabbos of Queens, or you can use your organizational skills to run the office NCAA tournament betting pool, because you know how to keep everything organized, right? Now, if God gives you organizational skills, don't waste it on being the guy that runs the betting pool. You got that? That's a good example that happens in real life. This comes up all the time in real life. If a guy's a good ball player, ooh, he's a ball player, so he can show off. If a guy's a good ball player and the younger kids look up to him because he's a good ball player, ooh. So if he doesn't curse on the court, he's teaching them. If he doesn't curse, he's the chashuv player, so we're not going to curse either. If he doesn't complain about a bad call, we have a rule when we play ball in our, well, my shir and our yeshiva, if there's a bad call, you don't argue bad calls. It's not, we're not going to fight. We do Shlomo Karabach style. Bad call, holy brother. Very nice. Thank you very much. That's it. That's it. So everyone knows. Holy brother means that was a really bad call. But we don't fight. That's the big joke. We don't argue calls. Holy brother. Oh my gosh. The one time. Whatever. I want to tell. Holy brother. Rebbe. Holy brother. Holy brother. Okay. Whatever. Now, that's the mashal. Got it? So the nimshal is the year in Israel is a golden coin. It's precious. It's a year you learn, you absorb, there's so much there. Sometimes people go back and they lose a lot of it. And yeah, they were in Israel, they learned some things. What a shame. What a waste to not take advantage. And the challenge of the coming years is to use the gold coin for what it's supposed to be used for. And make a plan that we've discussed to stay strong and connected and passionate about our Avodas Hashem. And that's the gold coin mashal, and it's very important. This is like the biggest challenge. We don't want to end up 3 years from now, yeah, I got a soda out of my year in Israel. Yeah, I learned a few things. I heard a couple of nice stories. That's terrible. And we want to avoid that. Does that happen to most girls? No, that's the minority. But you want to make sure that you're in the big majority, that you use the gold coin for what it's worth. Finally, and this is like a topic sentence for the next 2 weeks, is the $83 story. And the $83 story, again, fits with Rav Orlovich's yesod of emotion with intellect and something tangible. In the next couple of weeks, you're going to be hearing and having different inspirational experiences. Let's say your kfutzah is misibat siyum. Right? There's a kfutzah has a misibat siyum. And then there's a big misibat siyum for the whole of Macha. And you might go to the kotel for the last time for this trip. Okay. For this trip. And you might have a really inspirational class that talks to you or something. And when that happens, I'm telling you, do this mental picture thing. Now you have cell phones, so take pictures and you keep these pictures. Then the $83. Everyone needs chizuk. I can prove it. Everyone needs chizuk. And during the year, there were things that gave you chizuk, and you have to hold on to them and find a way to maintain it. During the next few weeks, you're going to be exposed, you're going to hear things, your misibat for your kfutzah, the misibat for the whole misibat for the all of Machal, the last time you daven at the kotel for this trip, let's not get depressed, just for this trip, and it's going to be inspiring, and you're going to use Rav Orlovich's ideas to maintain that inspiration. Everyone needs, I need chizuk. I get chizuk hearing my Rebbe's voices. There's one shir from Rav Salvechik that I get chizuk every time I hear it. When I hear Rav Shechter's voice, I get chizuk. When Rav Shechter cries, I cry and I get chizuk from that. He was talking about one of his Talmidim, he started crying. And Rabbi David, just gave a shiur on women covering their hair, an hour and a half. You were there when I came and spoke to him?
Yeah.
And the last 15 minutes, he told stories. I was crying, and I'm driving along. I don't have the shoes. I'm driving. I'm holding that two hands. It was a mess. So anyway, but I was crying. I'm crying away there in the car. And anyway, so that's if something. So for me, hearing my Rebbe, I download YU Torah Shirim. I listen to my. I hear my Rebbe's voices. It gives me chizik hearing my Rebbeim's voices because. All right. Good. Everyone needs chizuk. I can prove it. Even Rav Nevensol needs chizuk in a sense. What does that mean? It goes as follows. First of all, who is Rav Nevensol? Rav Nevensol is one of the greatest Gedolim and Tzaddikim. There's a story that Rabbi Mark Wilds tells over. You know, the Manhattan Jewish Experience, MJE, it's a Kiyuv organization. He once brought a group of not yet religious Jews to Israel. They visited Rav Nevensol's house. One of them was Lolenu blind, and as they were leaving, Rav Nevensol jumps up to take him by the hand to lead him to the door. It's a mitzvah. And the blind person says to Rav Nevensol, "Who are you? I feel holiness when you touch my hand." Mark Wilde saw this happen, so you can call him on the phone. He's in the phone book. Rav Nevensol hemmed and hawed. He said, No, many people help me hold my hand to help me. How are you so holy? I feel holiness. How are you so holy? So Rav Nevensol is sort of stuck. I mean, he's not going to lie. And the guy asked the question. So Rav Nevensol said, "I'm fortunate to have great teachers, and I try to learn Torah whenever I can." There you go. The secret to Kedusha. And that's what he said. Now, that story came back to Yeshiva. And one of the Rebbeim said, "What's the pshat in the story? You know, when one sense gets weakened, the other ones are stronger. You know, if a person can't see Lalenu, then their hearing gets better." So this Rebbe said, Rav Nevins, that this person, he couldn't see, his spiritual senses were heightened. We would say, Rav Nevensol wouldn't say this, we would say his spiritual spider sense was heightened, was more sensitive, because he couldn't see. Correct? I think that's a good mashal. Rav Nevensol couldn't say that mashal. Now, it's an amazing story. So that person, Rav Nevensol, sometimes reads art school Gedolim books during Night Seder. He knows how to read English. He learned English in high school. Why is he reading? Can you imagine like the publicity? Like, you know, art school takes a picture, puts it in Mishpacha magazine. Rav Nevensol is reading, you know, a Gedol book. We asked his son, why does your father read these books during Night Seder? Rav Chizkiya said, "My father says, reading the stories about the Gedolim gives him chizuk." So Rav Nevensol spends his precious time getting chizuk. If Rav Nevensol wants to get an ounce of chizuk, how much chizuk do we need? Like a neutron bomb. Think about it. People need chizuk. The world is crazy in the sense that it's always changing, not for the better. To maintain the Torah's view of morality and the Torah's approach is difficult, and life is hectic. You're running around doing things, and like you don't have time to stop to get chizuk. And you have to just, if you found something which gives you chizuk, so grab it and use it and reuse it to give chizuk, to stay strong. It's a priceless gift for me, having my Rebbeim, and for me, YU Torah and my Rebbeim, and the shirim hearing from the Rav. And well, so the $83, the true story. I heard once from Dr. Pelkowitz, and now it was printed up in the book called Too Beautiful, one of Rav Teller's most recent books. It's the first story. I heard it from Dr. Pelkowitz live first, and then Rav Teller says he heard it from Dr. Pelkowitz. There was a woman who, a big Balas Chesed, she had a 10-year-old daughter, and she would encourage her to do Chesed. So they live in a certain town, and an old lady moves in. Lo'aleinu, the old lady is blind. So the woman wants her daughter to do chesed. She says to her daughter, "I want you to read to her once a week." Okay, it's a little uncomfortable to read to someone who's blind. You're 10 years old, but she gets used to it. And she develops a connection, a rapport with the old lady. One day she says to her, "You know, it must be hard like being blind. Like, how do you deal with being blind? It's hard." So the old lady says, "Oh, that's okay. I'll be able to see in 2 years." The girl says, "What? You'll see in 2 years?" "They discovered a new laser surgery, and I can get my sight back. But I can't afford the surgery now, it's too expensive. When I turn 70, I'll be eligible for Medicaid, and they'll pay for the surgery. So in 2 years, I'll be able to see. So the girl said, you mean the reason why you can't see now is because you can't afford the surgery? She said, yeah. So the next day, this 10-year-old girl, she was very shy. So Dr. Pelkowitz tells us about how she overcame her shyness. Okay. She's very shy. She goes into her school and says, I'm raising money for a woman, elderly woman's surgery to get her eyesight back. Whatever you have, please donate. She collects $83, puts it in an envelope, comes back to the old lady and says, okay, let's go. And they go to the, Hashem runs the world, they go to the local Orthodox Ben Torah eye surgeon who is around, and they're in his office. You know, and they're waiting there, the eye doctor. He comes out, he sees them like an old lady, it's not her granddaughter, and he talks to them. He says, what are you here for? So the girl says, oh, here for her surgery. She needs to get her eyesight back. And she gives $83. He says, he hopped, what's going on? He says, okay. And he puts her in the hospital. He pays for the insurance. He pays for the hospital room. He does surgery for free. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. And she gets her eyesight back. The mother doesn't know anything about this. The girl did it all by herself. She recovers, the old lady recovers, walks into the mother and says, thank you so much, your daughter gave my eyesight back, and tells her the whole story. The mother is like overwhelmed, like, oh my gosh, she realized what happens. And the mother says to herself, you know, it must be that, you know, like my daughter sort of guilted the doctor into doing this, he felt sorry for her. So the mother felt an obligation to pay for the surgery. So she goes to the doctor and says, thank you so much, what a chesed, and help my daughter and everything. But you know, I want to pay you for this because you didn't have an obligation to do this. I can't pay you all at once, but over time. So he says, nope. How often do I get a chance to do such a mitzvah to give someone their eyesight back? He said, but I have one request. And he takes out the envelope and he says, I want to keep these $83. Because when I'm having a rough day, things aren't going well, I touch the envelope and I remind myself that I once did something great with my life. That envelope is priceless because the envelope gives him chizuk. It's a source of chizuk forever. It's worth more than the $30,000 for the surgery. If you have that envelope, something that talks to you, it's a special sefer. It's the voice of a Rebbe. The voice of a teacher. It's a certain, if you have that, you have to hold on to it and take it with you, put it in, you know, put it in your wallet or in your pocketbook or something, that you carry it with you. And it's, people need chizuk. The world is crazy. We live in a hectic world. People are running around, they're busy. If you have something, it's the greatest bracha. This gives me chizuk. It reminds me of, I told you to use mincha to give you chizuk. If you have something tangible to hold on to, but you find something which talks to you. Very important. If you find that, grab it. It's like, it's priceless. I just can't tell you. And I'm very fortunate that I have that in my own life. And if you have something like that, you have to do whatever you can. And the next couple of weeks, we have these special events and these special, let's say your kvutzah's misibat siyum, like a little kvutzah thing. But let's say, so I'd record these things. Record your kfutza goodbye party. Because when you hear your friends talking and this, you'll listen again years later or months later for sure. It's a good idea. I'll give it as an example. It gives you chizuk. It gives you chizuk. when guys leave yeshiva early sometimes, we have like mini goodbye parties. They make a siyum. Everyone in shir talks about how, you know, how different qualities of the young man and I record this, I send them, and people listen months later. It gives them chizuk. You got it? So look for ideas. Okay. We have the MS, and if you found that thing that gives you chizuk, if it's, for me, it's the voice of my Rebbein. When I hear Rav Shechter cry, so that's, you know, and he cries a lot. I hear Rav Shechter cry, so that's chizuk for a long time. And you hear your teacher's voices, or if it's a sefer that you connected with, everyone needs chizuk. So that doctor had this $83 envelope, was priceless. So in the next couple of weeks, you should be thinking about things you can do to get that envelope in your hand that you carry around with you that will give you chizuk to stay strong. when you go back to the Western world. That this list I gave you, that my approach to going back is, I call it cautious optimism. That if you have a plan, I call it a plan for success. The fact is, the vast majority of our students do very well back in their homes. And these ideas, B'ezrat Hashem, can be helpful in helping everyone achieve that goal.